It's the Batter Up Podcast on the 28th day of July 2020 as we go through and try to navigate the uncharted waters that is the baseball season during a pandemic. Willie P here with you along with Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson. I say hello to my two cohorts. Hello, Joseph.
Hey, Will, how's it going? Are we only 4 days into the season? It feels like we're 40 days into the season.
Yes, well, we are technically 4 times 2.72, so actually we're more like 8 games into the season.
Okay.
So eight plus games into the season. Hello, Caleb Johnson.
We're all doomed and nothing matters. What's up, guys?
All right. I feel like if we had done this podcast on Monday at this time, there would be a different tinge. But since we're doing it Tuesday at this time, there's obviously a lot more that's happened, not just in the game at large, but most importantly in Atlanta, where we sit, where the look at the rotation, instead of Spahn and Sade in 2 days of rain, it's Soroka and Fried in 3 days of need, because of the fact that the Braves really don't have viable rotation spots beyond those two aforementioned guys. And the one guy who I think we had looked to try and maybe bounce back off of what we saw to end last year, Mike Foldynewicz, has now been designated for assignment. The Braves have 7 days to either trade him or place him on waivers and then figure out exactly where he will sit and continue his career, whether it's in the Gwinnett satellite camp or with another franchise. But we'll start with you, Joe, as somebody who I think, you know, has said that this is almost something that feels like the Braves foresought. It's something that I think if you look back on things, maybe we could have seen it coming, but it seems to me like this was something that was almost predestined before he even took them out on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, there was some big news around him, obviously, when he pitched in that preseason game against the Marlins, and then afterwards, his velocity was down in that game, just as it was against the Rays last night. And, you know, after that game, he had the excuses that he didn't have the rosin out there, that it had rained, that the gun was inaccurate, all this stuff. And I don't think that the Braves brass were that happy about that. But to be honest, like, I don't think that that's why he was DFA'd necessarily. I think he was DFA'd because his fastball is topping out at 91 miles an hour right now. And Brian Snicker said after the game yesterday that he's a guy who's always been a stuff guy. He's a guy that really needs to have that 96 to 98 mile an hour fastball with that devastating slider that he was able to develop and worked so well for him in 2018. So if he doesn't have that, he's not the kind of guy who's going to, you know, be like a veteran and be fine around the edges and be really, you know, a very kind of nuanced pitcher like that. He's a guy who's going to blow you away with what he's got, and he doesn't have it anymore, which is, it's really sad to see, but I guess it makes some sense in that respect.
The craftiness, like you said, Joe, not there. You mentioned Brian Snicker's comments from Monday night. Here's some of them.
After the last, you know, the couple outings and the early camp, and we wanted to give it a go here, and it looked like it, you know, it was the same. You know, we didn't see enough increase in things and in the velocity. I mean, that's who he's been is, you know, he's been a stuff guy for the entire time that we've had him, and the stuff hasn't been there.
Brian Snicker from Monday night. Caleb, this is kind of sad because redemption stories are what we usually love to cling to in baseball. And I made this comparison on the air earlier today. You know, a lot of times we as sports fans, we get somewhat ticked off when a guy underperforms. But for this, it's more sad than angry, at least for me, looking at him.
No, I would 100% agree with that. It's this idea of a guy who, look, one of the things we knew about Folty is that he wears his heart on his sleeve kind of deal, you know? Like you know exactly what he's thinking when you're watching him at home pitch. Like, he puts it all out there, and whether it's, you know, post-game, which was why it's been frustrating and just odd to see him blame every single other thing other than himself, when it seems like in the past he was totally transparent about the fact of, yeah, something's not right with me mentally and I've got to go and get that figured out, which is what we thought he did last season when he went down to Gwinnett. And, you know, whether it's the wristband thing or just, I don't know, there's just some kind of charisma about Folti that you just wanted to see him do well. You wanted to, I've seen it on Twitter, people posting their individual stories about having some sort of relationship with Folti, and you just root for the guy because he's just a good guy. And so you want to see him do well versus other guys who obviously sometimes, you know, might come off as a jerk or whatever. And so seeing it end this way with Folti definitely feels more sad than frustrating just because you hate it had to end like this. But you, on the other hand, you have to understand where the organization is. I'm very fascinated with one thing that obviously we're dealing with a shortened season, but this kind of decision-making, is this the new way of Alex Anthopoulos thinking, or is this because we are in a 60-game season? I don't know which.
Brian Snicker spoke exactly to that.
Obviously, I think because of the situation and, you know, well, we got 56 games left and it just kind of revs it up or, you know, makes it, you know, hard to wait for somebody to get something going. So, I don't know.
That's a little bit from Brian Snitker. I'll get to what's next with the Braves in a moment. But what's next for Folti? Like we said, 7-day period where he can either be traded or placed on waivers. Usually teams try to wait that full 7 days to try and see exactly what they can get, if they can get something back for him. Otherwise, he'd have to go through waivers before he comes back to the Braves and has the opportunity to be outrighted to the Gwinnett satellite camp. Joe Patrick, do you think it's Mike Foltynewicz's last game he's pitched with the Braves?
I think so. I think it is. I think that if I just don't see him being able to make the resurrection that he needs to make at this point with the Braves. I think that he needs some time to build himself back up because, like, you know, it's something that we were kind of texting about during the game last night. I mean, he looks skinny. Like, he looks like too skinny to be able, and it would make sense that that weight loss would kind of coincide with a velocity drop. And if he's able, if he wants to get his velocity back up, he probably needs to put on some strength, which probably means he's going to need to get off of a normal throwing regimen. I just think there's going to be kind of like a longer buildup for him to get back to where he should be than, say, something like what happened last year, where the velocity was still pretty much there, but he needed to work on his, he needed to really kind of get his slider straightened out after he had an elbow injury in spring training. So I think that I just don't think that that's going to be with the Braves. I think that especially with the way that just the DFA procedure works, you know, there's going to be an opportunity for another team to jump in and snag him. And to be honest, I think that maybe it would be best for him to find just get a change of scenery. You know, and sometimes that's the best thing that can happen for a player is to just have a, honestly, it's like a life change for them to, you know, get to a new city, be around some different coaches, teammates, that kind of thing, and just have a fresh perspective on some things. And hopefully he can get back to where he was. I do want to just kind of add my own kind of anecdotes to on Folti, because Caleb was saying, you know, he'd been reading about some people talking about him on Twitter and stuff, you know, just in my recollection, having covered the team in the clubhouse last year, Folti is like a big kid. And I say that in like a really endearing way. Like, he's very, he's just like a jovial,
whimsical.
Obviously, he gets very down on himself too, obviously, when things aren't going well, but he's like, he's a joker, that kind of a guy, just very lighthearted and means well. And so I think that, you know, I just hate to see this for him. I was one of his kind of biggest defenders, especially after what happened in game 5 of the NLDS last year, where I still, if you go back and watch that start, he didn't get, people weren't barreling him. You know, he was just kind of getting dinked around and suffered from some bad luck, some defensive lapses, and things just did not break his way in that game. And if you look at game 2, he pitched a freaking masterpiece when the Braves needed it in a huge situation. So, and that was such a huge moment for him to kind of capstone this return that he had over the second half of the season. So all that to say, I just hope that he can get right, but I don't think it's going to be with the Braves.
Caleb, I think that if you look at the uniqueness of this season, I don't know how a shipment to Gwinnett helps him. If we were in a different type of season, a regular type season, maybe another trip to Gwinnett helps him figure things out like it did last year. But at the same time, I also think, you know, two consecutive trips to Gwinnett for a guy who was a former All-Star, it's kind of put up or shut up time at this point. I just don't know how a trip to Gwinnett in this rare season kind of helps him. I don't know how it does.
No, I don't think the Braves have any intentions. You were talking earlier about whether Atlanta thinks he'll clear and end up back on Gwinnett. I don't think they make this move if they have any intentions of Fulte being back with the Braves. They just, it's like I said, it's sad, but I think the front office is washing their hands of Mike Foltynewicz. They're just absolutely done. Someone else take, you know, control of him and try to figure him out. But whether it seems like the way they went about this is just bizarre. You just don't see a team, you know, having a guy struggle, and then before the game is even over, we're out here and he's been notified by the assistant GM that he's done, that he's, you know, that he's being designated. And manager Brian Snicker, we come in the post game and, you know, the microphone is in his face, and you totally expect Snicker to be like, yeah, well, you know, some decisions are being made, and you know, we'll comment on those at a later time. Instead, he's like, nah, he didn't have his stuff. It wasn't working out. We're just going to have to figure out something else. And it was just like, whoa, okay. So maybe the concerns about his stuff were there, and then you add on the excuses, and maybe that's enough to make them upset. Or maybe they know something else behind the scenes that isn't being discussed, and that's what pushed them to this point. Because you don't as a team who Alex Anthopoulos has said time after time that the Braves are planning on contending in this 60-game season, you don't make a move like that unless, you know, you've thought this through, you know, because that's just you've already been depleted, whether it's Hamels or whether it's Felix Hernandez. You don't add another one to the list unless you have a plan.
And obviously now the question is, what do the Braves do from here? You have Sean Newcomb, who had, I will call it, a shaky start, even though he limited the damage through 3 1/3. You know, Touki Toussaint, who is somebody who was used on Monday night, ineffectively, I would add, who is on turn with where Fulte is in the rotation. There was talk on the radio today that he could possibly be the one who slides into that slot, according to Alex Anthopoulos. There's a thought of Ian Anderson. There's a couple other guys that are
Patrick
in the satellite
Weigel.
Camp. Patrick Weigel's in there.
Tucker Davidson.
Tucker Davidson's another one. I mean,
Snit even without being prompted, said we could use an opener in that role, which was interesting.
I guess that leads me to my question. What do we go from here, independent of what we see from Kyle Wright on Monday night, on Tuesday night?
I think that we're certainly likely to see a planned piggybacking situation where we haven't really seen that as much, I feel like, in these first few games. Soroka gave you a great outing. So did Fried. Both of those guys kind of went what you would expect a normal starter to go, and they were pretty much able to use a typical bullpen rotation there. I think what the Braves will do is certainly like pencil in two guys that are going to be throwing that day, that are essentially both going to be designated as players who will be used. You know, obviously only one of them is going to start, but they will both kind of be considered as, you know, getting themselves prepared to throw 2-3 innings, something like that. And so hopefully you can just find two guys that can work in tandem and then get you to those late innings. That's what I think we'll see. Who those are going to be, I don't know. Snit has talked really highly about Yuli Chacin since he's been here. Josh Tomlin's always a guy that he's liked, but, you know, who knows, because they might need those guys in the games before out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I think just because of like, Joe, what you were mentioning about Snit throwing out the idea of an opener, and then with Alex Anthopoulos coming out and saying that Touki Toussaint is an option, I think the idea of Touki starting as an opener, you know, I mean, what he was 2 2/3 last night, and yes, he was a little shaky,
And what was that? Yeah.
Well, but I think, I mean, that was just a, it was an odd game in the first place.
They hit some
place.
Good pitches that he made, too.
It was a laugher, yeah.
Yeah, so I would, I think, you know, getting a fresh start, no one on base kind of deal for Tukey to come in and maybe pitch 2-3 innings and then piece something together after that is definitely a possibility. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, Chacin is an option. Tucker Davidson is one who I'm more of the idea of I'd love to see a guy like Tucker Davidson just because
it's new.
As we've it's new, and as we've seen with Contreras coming in, a guy that, you know, the scouting report really isn't that detailed yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get some early luck out of it, and in a 60 game season, you know, it kind of makes me think of Austin Riley coming in, where it was before people had the book on him, he looked great. And look, no one's really going to be able to put together a real detailed book this season. So do what you need to go win a championship.
I think outside of the starting pitching, and I think a lot of the very vocally voiced concerns about Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna, the Braves have looked like a very good group through the first four games. It's just a matter of managing the losses, managing the expectations. Though the one thing I think, if you want to take an overarching viewpoint, not just of the whole league, but I think in particular this National League Eastern Division, parity is going to reign the day, and a lot of that has to do with these American League East teams. I think we all kind of snickered on Sunday Night Baseball when Chipper Jones had picked the Rays as his World Series pick. We're seeing right now in these games that the Braves are playing against Tampa Bay, Tampa's legit, and they can mash.
Wait, totally. we weren't just snickering at the fact that Chipper Jones was on air? Yeah. Look, they've got to get that man back in studio. I love Chipper to death. Obviously, as the youngest of this group, that's a guy that I grew up on watching the Braves. The early parts of his broadcasting career with him being at home.
Woo! I will listen. Okay, you're gonna put me in a very difficult position to defend Chipper Jones here.
I'm sorry. Look, I love the man. It just
I will sit here and say that they did not put him in the best position to succeed.
No.
In that three-man booth with Boog. Like, I would rather have heard him alone with Boog instead of him, Boog, and Rick Sutcliffe. And I don't mean to say this as a negative thing to Rick Sutcliffe, but that man takes up a lot of the energy in the room. And
yes.
Rightfully so. Yeah. I mean, he's
and
very...
Chipper stays right on par with it. That I mean, obviously, like, look, I'm a guy who I can be low energy. Trust me, but look, I can be very even keeled.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I'm totally honest about it.
That's different.
And it's one of those, Chipper, like, I know we're not sponsored by Advocare yet, but buddy, drink some Spark or something before you go on broadcast. Like, it's just...
I'm Caleb Johnson, and I have low T.
Okay.
To get this thing back on the rails here, I will say, you know, it's been interesting. Will, we talked about this on the radio today about some of these Braves bats and how they've been obviously a little slow to kind of really get started here. Obviously, they had the big breakout against the Mets that night. But I think that, you know, the Braves have played against some really top quality pitching so far this year. I do want to play a little bit from Dansby kind of talking. After that, after they scored those 14 runs, he said something that really reminded me a lot of what people were talking about with this team last year.
A little bit. So it's deep, it's consistent, and the most promising thing is just any different kind of game, you know, we can play home runs or you know, small ball or, you know, using our speed. It's a very dynamic team, which is very fun to be a part of.
I think against the Mets, we saw them play. We saw that
three different games, pitcher's duel in game one, a game where you won late in game two, and then you won a slugfest. And I feel like that's the thing. You know, we talked a lot about what organizational depth means. And a lot of times that means you just have a lot of players in a lot of different positions. But I also feel like the quality and the character of their depth is another thing that makes them a viable threat to the rest of the National League is the fact that they can win games in different ways, whether it's with speed and moving runners over the old-fashioned way, whether it's by a game where you need a lot of power or a game where you get a good start from Mike Soroka and hopefully a little bit more run support. I mean, that's kind of the way that the Braves are going to have their success this year, is being able to adapt to the kind of game that they find themselves in.
Also, dare I say that Dansby Swanson is the Braves' best hitter currently?
Yeah.
Like, first off, he came
or
back.
Or Marcelo Zuna. Or yeah, Marcelo true. Zuna.
I would put Dansby up there, though. I mean, he's got more hits. He's got a better slugging percentage. The man...
A lot of it came in one game. A lot of it came in one game or two games.
Yes. But in fairness, well, when he came back from this whole pandemic thing, like, Dansby looked yoked.
Yeah.
Like, the man was clearly in the gym. And that makes a difference.
I do think that we are going to have these small sample size theater overreactions too over the course of this 60 game sprint, which I'm very much looking forward to, because it does feel like every day is a playoff day, which is something that Joe, you were a big proponent of.
Yeah. I will say with Dansby, it's really encouraging to see him going the other way. You know, he hit that home run. Was it against the Mets? It must have been against the Mets in that 14 run game.
Yep.
Where he hit the homer the other way. And that is the exact spot where, when he was his hottest last year, he was hitting balls to that same exact area over and over again until he had his injury. And I think that that's one of the most encouraging thing to see out of Dansby, is him hit that home run there, and then he hit the other one, the one against the Rays to dead center. I mean, that's pretty impressive power, and the Braves have power that kind of goes throughout their lineup, you know, like even all the way down to the bottom. Guys like Dansby, you've got Austin Riley, who's hitting in, what, sixth or seventh so far. Even William Contreras has shown power so far. I did want to kind of touch on Austin Riley, too. I think he's been a really interesting guy to follow in these early days, because he's a guy who obviously got off to a super hot start. Those first like 42 games, I want to say, or 42 days or however long it was, he was absolutely tearing it up. But I was looking at the stats the other day when Austin mentioned that he said a walk is more important for him right now than a home run, or he prefers a walk to a home run right now. And he had 18 homers last year and 16 walks. And so I think that it's really, that will be kind of a nice little measuring stick for us to use in terms of gauging his improvement. But I did want to play Brian Snicker talking about him.
Yeah, and like I said, I look at the take. I was looking at the takes a little, you know, during the spring, because some of the balls that he would bite on last year, he had some really good takes today, I thought. And if he's doing that, he's putting himself in a position to narrow a pitcher down and be able to use all that power. I mean, he's coming, man. He's getting there. I look at that as much as the result, because like I say, he just missed a couple. Because a guy like that, he starts we saw what he could do. You know, and he's making adjustments, because he's that kind of guy that, man, he goes off, he can carry it.
I do want to recognize the play of William Contreras as well, the Braves catcher who made his major league debut over the weekend, played very, very well in the series against the Mets, got his first major league RBI and his first major league hit in the same game, and in the same at bat, I should say. I say that also as a way to reference the fact that, according to what Brian Snicker said before Tuesday night's game, looks like both Tyler Flowers and Travis d'Arnaud are feeling better, which is an encouraging sign for the Braves' catching situation. I don't know if Contreras has made a bid to stay with the big club right now, if they're both back by the time we get to the end of the weekend, but I think he has made his case to be the next man up if, say, you're not getting what you need out of either Travis or Tyler.
Well, I think at the bare minimum, he passed Alex Jackson.
Yeah, true.
You know, the future, as far as if we're looking at future catcher of the Atlanta Braves, Contreras put his name up there. And it also helps when your big brother, you know, who's with another big league club, comes out and says, oh,
he stumped for him. He stumped for him.
Yeah, I think he can be better than me, and everybody's kind of like, oh, huh? And I, you know, it's honestly, it's half production and half, getting in the minds of people. And once you start convincing people based on outside perspectives of like, yeah, maybe this guy really is good, then I think as a club, you start convincing yourself of, yeah, maybe this is the guy. Now, obviously, I don't think they're going to do anything drastic like, you know, designate Tyler Flowers or anything that. But he's definitely put his self up there as a guy the Braves are going to have to take very seriously as soon as, I would think, next season.
It's been so encouraging to see him actually put up the production now that the season has gotten going, because he was just getting such rave reviews from essentially everybody I heard from, whether it's the other writers, whether it's the Brian Snicker talking about him. Dansby Swanson talked about him after during the Mets series as well.
So
I think he's done such a tremendous job. We talked a little bit about this earlier, just about Sal doing a great job of getting those guys prepared. And also just being able to have those veteran guys around him. And, he's obviously been around the game for a while, just with his brother. And, you can tell that he's definitely thinking through some things, when he's playing. He's very, very, very gifted. And it's pretty awesome to see what he's going to be able to provide as he gets older and sees the game in a different way. And, it really starts to slow down for him.
Like I said, you get in the minds of other players, especially ones on your own team, and if they start speaking up for you, I say we look to next season for Contreras to really see some time, but let Tyler Flowers struggle at any point this season, and as we've seen, the front office, AA and Snicker, they'll pull the plug.
So I make the drastic transition to the game at large, and we all know by now the story involving the Miami Marlins and their bevy of positive tests. Major League Baseball has said that they do not want to have them play the rest of the weekend. Their games against the Phillies have been postponed. Phillies will not play again until the weekend against Toronto. The Yankees and Orioles will play each other beginning tomorrow. I say, basically, did we just waste the last 27 minutes of our time?
Gentlemen. Well, it's funny that you say that, because look, I just went 27 minutes without being the Eeyore of the group, like I have been the last few weeks, saying, I don't know if we're going to finish this thing, but it's just this. Look, it's the fact that, everyone is saying, all right, well, the Marlins are the only team who have had positive tests in the last week, but they went from having, 11 or 12 to now we're up in 19, depending on how many coaches. We might be in the 20s. I can't exactly remember. Doesn't honestly really matter.
It's a lot, over Bob. Half, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's over half the team. You can't just go out and field over half the team in future prospects and by signing guys. Like, the Marlins are going to be out of things. Here's the problem. Everybody keeps saying this is just like FC Dallas over in Major League Soccer. It's not, because FC Dallas was in a bubble. They didn't follow instructions in a bubble, and they got kicked out of the bubble. No one here is in a bubble. So it is absolutely possible that 2 weeks from now, it could be the Mets, it could be the Yankees, it could be name team here.
Phillies.
That all of a sudden starts, they have an outbreak of the virus, and then what, are we going to do the same thing there where, because we are now at the point with the Marlins out, the Braves play, like there are a lot of important teams that are going to be making playoff pushes that are now potentially not going to have games against the Marlins. So now instead of going by best record, we're going to have to go by, I'm blanking, a winning percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Laying out the playoffs that way. But if someone else drops out, like, I want Major League Baseball to be able to figure this thing out. I just don't know if it happens again or, potentially is worse than this time. I don't know what they can do, because the Marlins are having this problem because they knew about the positive tests and they played anyways.
I think what the Marlins story is really showing us right now is that the virus will spread pretty quickly and rampantly throughout a team based on how, at least how the Marlins were interacting within themselves, within their own group, which we assume is not much different than many other teams around baseball in terms of, you know, giving each other daps or being in the clubhouse with each other and whatnot. I think, you know, we talked about this obviously pretty extensively leading up to the season, but Major League Baseball's kind of premise seemed to be centered around, we know there's going to be positive cases, but let's make sure those positive cases don't extrapolate in, you know, exponentially and infect a whole ton of people so that we can isolate those cases, move them to the COVID list, move the players, you know, get players from the reserves in to replace them and then play that way. But this Marlins situation appears that when the virus enters, if it enters this little micro population, which is in this case the team, it spreads very quickly throughout. Like, you know, these guys are in a clubhouse together and there is a lot of close contact that happens in those situations. And I just don't know. Yeah, we don't know exactly if like what protocols were maybe being adhered to or not being adhered to. But I think it's just it is kind of an illustration of how rampant things can get within one individual team.
At the risk of saying the exact same things that both you guys said, Rob Manfred's a stooge. Find him to be a liar or dumb. I don't particularly take anything that he says seriously. And every time he opens his mouth, he makes things worse. We got that all clear? Is that all good?
Cool. It's okay. Never good when you're going on national television. And you're going, this is not nightmare scenario.
Like, well, not only that. Okay, so I get that he has to go on his own network, like his own sports network. But like, I want him back on there with Carl Ravitch. Like, Carl Ravitch is the hero we need. Maybe not the one we deserve, but the hero we need in order to go back to Rob Manfred and say, "Hey, buddy, when we talked a couple of months ago, and you guys were, you know, chortling about money and whether or not you wanted to mitigate your losses, you weren't really worried about the health and safety protocols, were you? Were you really? Yeah? Huh?
Well, it is just the pure fact that an entire organization can know about positive tests and not have to tell anyone. Like, the Marlins played
no oversight.
They played knowing they had guys who had coronavirus and potentially could have spread it to an entire other team. And now you've got this whole thing of guys being like, "Well, I don't want to play the Marlins. Do you want to play the Marlins?" "No, I don't want to play the Marlins." You know, and like, just the, I don't know how this spirals into such a big deal from one bad decision just shows me that it just seems like Major League Baseball can't be trusted, or each team cannot be trusted without some kind of outside, you know, third party involvement.
And I think that, you know, I think that we have a tendency, when I say we, I just mean people who in and around baseball, to kind of look at this situation like, well, it's just the Marlins. But like, what if this could have happened to any team, you know? And like, because it happened to the Marlins, a team that's not going to be contending for a postseason spot, you know, it's like, okay, well, it's just the Marlins. But like, if this happens to the Yankees or the Braves or like some other, you know, obviously
they would have shut the whole league down if it was the Yankees.
It becomes a different conversation, I think.
Well, and that's the thing, is that the Phillies were going on to play the Yankees.
Yeah.
If the Yankees get shut down by, you know, just a handful of cases, there is all out chaos. And it is one of those. Here's the other thing, is by teams not getting to play the Marlins because the Marlins suck, and that's just almost an automatic win, you're taking wins away from teams. So you're further just screwing this all up. And I'm so scared.
All right. Before I say something that's going to get me either fired or in trouble or sued for libel, we will conclude. Hopefully we have better news on the back end of this next week. Hopefully we have better news regarding the Braves rotation as they go through this series with the Rays and renew again their rivalry with the Mets as the homestand that should be the real clear barometer of where the Braves will be. At least the early part of the season continues and begins on Wednesday. Check out the Batter Up podcast, the radio.com app, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also tweet us at JAPatrick200, at ATLJohnson18, and yours truly, at Willie P. Style. For Caleb Johnson, for Joe Patrick, I'm Will Pelagic saying thanks for listening to Batter Up, a Radio.com and 92.9 The Game exclusive.